John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, December 13, 2010. Today, the Israeli authorities released Abit Abu Rakhma, one of the leaders of the nonviolent movement against the annexation wall and settlements in Bilayin, a village near Ramallah. Abu Rakhma spent 18 months in prison and was forced to pay 6,000 shekels for, according to the Israeli prosecution, obstructing the work of the army and incitement. In other news, sources at the Palestinian Foreign Ministry declared that representatives of the European Union will discuss the possibility of recognizing a Palestinian state along the 1967 borders if no agreement is reached with Israel within a year. The discussion will be based on a resolution draft made by Germany, which keeps the peace process a year before starting other strategies. The legal committee of the Israeli Knesset decided on Monday to approve a new draft made by the Israeli Interior Ministry, in which it is demanded that Palestinian detainees imprisoned on nationalistic or political grounds should not be allowed to meet their lawyers up to 6 months after their arrest. The law also allows prison directors to prevent visitations up to 97 hours instead of the originally allocated 24 hours. In separate reports, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories published that during the past year, at least 81 minors from Silwan were arrested or detained for questioning, most of them on suspicion of stone throwing. The arrests and detentions followed confrontations between Palestinian and settlers in the area, where there is a great tension resulting from the taking of control of houses and archaeological sites by settlers. With regard to the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, U.S. Special Middle East Envoy George Mitchell intended to hold a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem in an attempt to push the stalled peace talks forward. In addition, Mitchell intends to meet with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah. Mitchell's visit comes shortly after U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton stated that Washington is serious about pursuing a peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians and for establishing the foundation of an independent Palestinian state. On Sunday, the Israeli army states that the soldier who was injured on Saturday at night during clashes with Palestinian fighters in Gaza was not hit by Palestinian fire as previously announced, but was shot by another soldier. Two Palestinians were killed in the same clashes while Israeli soldiers were invading an area inside the Gaza Strip. On Saturday, it was also reported that the Jerusalem municipality is trying to oblige store owners in Arab East Jerusalem neighborhoods to change the language of their store signs into Hebrew, and informed the owners that unless they do so, their stores will not be licensed and they will have to be shut down. On Friday, a delegation of the World Jewish Congress leaders met with Pope Benedict at the Vatican and asked the pontiff to combat what they called as a new form of antisemitism, referring to criticism of Israel and its violations against Palestinians. In a statement released to the press, it was stressed the Pope's compromise to join forces to fight antisemitism in the world. Palestinian sources reported also on Friday that Israeli soldiers kidnapped former minister of detainees, Wasfi Kubaha, while heading to visit his family in Barta village, near the northern West Bank city of Jenin. He was moved to an Israeli hospital later on due to a sharp increase in his blood sugar level. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You have been listening to Palestine Today from International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Husam Kassis and Anne Irazola.
Kandahar, Afghanistan, yesterday. 6 U.S. soldiers were killed in the van bombing of a U.S. military outpost. The newly installed outpost was essentially a single large house, and the bomb consisted of a van loaded with an estimated 4,400 pounds of explosives. This was about the same size as the Oklahoma City truck bomb, and the U.S. military is lucky it wasn't just as deadly. The Taliban took credit for the attack. Iraq. Friday, Multinational Force Iraq, meaning the U.S. military, is reporting the death of a United States Forces Iraq soldier while conducting operations at an undisclosed location in Iraq on Thursday, the 8th of December. News reports indicate that a soldier died from small arms fire and gunshot wounds in the Al-Dumanaya Wasit province. Wait a minute, what U.S. operation in Iraq? I thought U.S. combat operations in Iraq were over. Oh yeah, that's been said before! Ramadi, Iraq, Sunday. The suicide bomb attack at a checkpoint near Anbar Provincial Office has killed 12 people, including 6 police, while wounding 41. The AP wire gives a higher death toll of 17, but a lower total of injured. Anbar's deputy governor says the government offices were the target. This account also says police found and defused a second bomb. Needless to say, this has been blamed on Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which has waged a campaign of major suicide car and other bombings against government offices for over a year. Numanaya, Iraq, today. An explosive charge blew up in front of a cop's house in the north of Quds City, causing material losses to the house and its neighboring houses, but caused no human casualties, a Wasit police source reported to Aswan al-Iraq news agency. Iraq, ongoing. New York Times is reporting that thousands of Christians are fleeing Iraq to escape a campaign of violence against them. This has intensified since a Halloween siege of and hostage taking at a church in Baghdad. United States, ongoing. AstraZeneca's psychiatric drug Seroquel is being blamed for several deaths of American military veterans. A number of veterans being treated for PTSD, a use for which Seroquel is not approved, have died in their sleep. The VA has increased their spending on Seroquel by over 770% since 2001, even though the number of patients has increased only 34%. It should be kept in mind that Seroquel is made by AstraZeneca, a notorious customer of that puppy-killing animal research lab, Huntington Life Sciences, or HLS. Mr. Barack Obama, haven't we had enough death? Has anything really changed in Iraq or Afghanistan since the start of these wars? Now's the time to throw in the towel. Bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me. Ain't going back again.
With his unauthorized release of thousands of classified military files related to the U.S. war in Afghanistan this summer, Australian citizen Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, became an internationally known public figure virtually overnight. Over the past few weeks, WikiLeaks has released thousands of secret U.S. State Department cables exposing Washington's confidential discussions of international issues and assessments of heads of state. With less than 1% of the estimated 250,000 cables published on the Internet or in the pages of five newspapers that were given the entire archive, there is the potential for future dramatic revelations. But as U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder explored ways to prosecute Mr. Assange, and some American politicians and commentators called for the WikiLeaks founder to be assassinated or designated as a terrorist, British police arrested Assange December 7th on a Swedish extradition warrant related to alleged sex offenses. In anticipation of government efforts to silence him, Assange, who was denied bail by a London court, had earlier threatened to automatically release key U.S. State Department cables if he or his group were subject to legal action. He has ensured the documents would be accessible as needed by sending over 100,000 people around the world the entire archive of 250,000 cables in encrypted form. The pressure on Assange had been building in the days before his arrest, since the web hosting division of Amazon.com, PayPal.com, and a Swiss bank severed their business relationships with WikiLeaks. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Danny Schechter, editor at MediaChannel.org, who examines the U.S. corporate media's spin on the WikiLeaks story and the public's right to know about their government's conduct versus the determination of those in power to keep sensitive diplomatic and military information secret.
Well, you know, first of all, let's look at this. 250,000 diplomatic cables is really at issue here. This is not an analysis of these cables, but simply the raw data that's being provided to newspapers and other media outlets in hopes that they'll add some context and background to it. And of these documents, 250,000 so far, only something like 700 is on the website of WikiLeaks, okay? So, you know, you're in a situation here where we don't really have all of these documents yet, but we do see a pattern here, and this is really what's important. The pattern is that overseas in Germany and in England and Spain, and you know, the focus is really looking at American foreign policy and how it is conducted, and so the documents that that they've been focusing on really help illuminate American foreign policy practices, how it operates, how the diplomats work, whether, you know, as in being encouraged to spy at the United Nations, or really documents that deal with the wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan, as well as individual countries. What the American media has focused on, of course, is the personality stuff, you know, the nurse that accompanies Muammar Gaddafi around, the Ukrainian voluptuous nurse, you know, she's probably gotten more ink than almost anything else here. And of course, the narrative that the American media, New York Times particularly, has seized upon is really consistent with the government approach, basically looking at Iran as bad guys in the world, and documents that show that other countries see Iran in that light, particularly Arab states that have been lobbying the United States to go to war against, you know, Iran, including, you know, Israel. And so the U.S. media has been sort of burying any facts that counter the case for war. So again, the same pattern that I saw of U.S. media putting forth a pro-war narrative, it seems to be doing the same here, except in this particular case, you have a global audience for all of this. And, you know, in various countries, the governments are upset about it. Karzai in Afghanistan is blaming the United States for it. And the U.S. government has tried to, you know, crush WikiLeaks. There have been denial of service attacks on its website. But according to figures I've seen, there are 507 websites in the world that are actually mirroring the WikiLeaks. So the United States government has been unable to bury it, which is also significant because we're now in an age of info war with governments now involved in hacking and trying to stop information that they don't like. And WikiLeaks has really brought this contradiction out.
Do you get the feeling that the elite U.S. corporate media feel the public has a right to know here? Or are they siding with the Pentagon and the White House that this stuff should be suppressed?
Well, they're doing both at the same time. That's what's so interesting here. They're you know, saying, well, we're you know, printing these documents because we think they're important and we think the public has a right to know. But we're also spinning these documents in a way that tends to support the very values that WikiLeaks is challenging by its act of releasing these documents. So the papers really line up with the status quo and with the establishment. You know, there was this flap with the New York Times where, you know, when the last disclosures came out on a Sunday, they carried the disclosures and they carried a really snarky profile of Assange, you know, as a troubled person, you know, quoting people who used to work with him and all this. That's why Assange didn't want to give the documents to the New York Times this time. But the Guardian, of all things, gave it to the New York Times. And the reason was that they were afraid the British government would try to suppress the publication in England. So by giving it to the New York Times, they made it more widely available. So the Guardian was only one paper of many carrying the documents. So, you know, there's all these games that media people play here. But clearly, what we're seeing is that facts are being buried in the coverage of all of this. And a lot of people really don't get what these things are. If WikiLeaks is shut down, if its leader and other people who work with them are, you know, prosecuted or killed, you know, this will be a terrible blow against freedom of information. You know, it's not clear these days that freedom of the press and freedom of information are the same things, because in many countries, especially ours, you know, the press is often the last place you turn to for real information. That's why we have the internet, so many internet sites, programs like yours. You know, this is independent media really challenging corporate media, challenging the dominant media, and offering other narratives. And that's why this is a fight, you know, for all of us who believe in freedom of information and the right to know. That's what's really at issue here, in my opinion.
That was Danny Schechter, award-winning independent filmmaker, author, and editor at MediaChannel.org. His most recent film and book are titled Plunder, The Crime of Our Time. Read Danny's News Dissector blog at MediaChannel.org.
Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have
side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Baltimore, Maryland, the FBI has again entrapped a local Muslim youth in yet another fake bomb plot involving yet another FBI-provided fake car bomb. The Washington Post is reporting that a 21-year-old construction worker befriended undercover FBI agents on Facebook, and just like in that phony Christmas tree bomb plot, was enticed into driving a fake car bomb to a military recruiting center. It is, of course, at these recruiting centers the U.S. military recruits soldiers to kill Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan. The target of the investigation was approached by undercover FBI agents who did not like his pro-Muslim insurgency Facebook page. This is at least the third time in recent weeks that the FBI has been involved in one of these bomb plots. In the first case, going so far as to advise would-be jihad warriors to bomb our metro stations. The real lesson of this case is simple. Don't trust the FBI when they say there was a bomb plot. Don't trust Facebook for anything. And don't work with anyone you just met on Facebook or otherwise over the internet for anything where security counts.
No more lies. No blood and fire. Oh, no more lies. Oh, no more lies.
Bomb fire! An IMF-style austerity program in Britain has blown up in the faces of its authors. As part of a budgetary austerity program, the British government was proposing to triple tuition for college students, but students are refusing to put up IMF-style austerity. On the 9th of December, thousands of students, backed by trade unionists, laid siege to the British Parliament building. As of sunset on the 9th of December, police lines were buckling as protesters, protected by heavy riot shields, slugged it out with heavily outnumbered police. Reported casualties included 12 cops and 42 protesters wounded, not counting protesters treated by field medics brought in by protest organizers. At one point, two members of the British royal family blundered into the protest in a Rolls Royce and were promptly set upon by protesters chanting, "Off with their heads!" This may be the most pointed attack on the very top of the British upper class since the 1600s. British Prime Minister Cameron is warning that protesters, quote, will feel the full force of the law. That's about as likely as the same thing happening to this radio station. I can guarantee you that any further IMF-style austerity programs in the UK will feel the full force and fury of community organizers and street protesters, however.
Welfare reform, let them eat cake. Why should we care? Bye, 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 bye. See the greed of the shop and malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line, fat in your belly too. See the greed of the shop and malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line, fat in your belly too. Bye, 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 bye. With pigs for his children and rags, welfare reform, let them eat cake. Why should we care? Bye, 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 bye. See the greed of the shop and malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line, fat in your belly too.
Powerful unions in South Africa, like the Congress of South African Trade Unions, have joined a new campaign to oppose Walmart's plan to buy out South African big box retailer, Massmart. South African unions with close links to the ruling African National Congress government are seeking to block Walmart from its plan to rapidly expand in sub-Saharan Africa. To disrupt ongoing merger talks, the South African Commercial, Catering, and Allied Workers Union launched a broad-based campaign against Walmart and its anti-union practices. South African unions are also calling for Walmart to release its handbook that advises managers how to preserve a union-free workplace. According to the news magazine In These Times, the union is demanding that Walmart accept the existing terms and conditions of current labor contracts with Massmart. The South African campaign is based on the success of the U.S. Wake Up Walmart campaign, organized by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, that blocked Walmart in major cities like Los Angeles.
7th of December, Pearl Harbor Day. Walmart refused to even appear at a community meeting in D.C. to discuss what many suspect is supposed to be a done deal to drop a Walmart on the neighborhood over the objection of residents.
And what we need to do is continue on with the program.
The moderator could barely enforce the developer's planned format for the meeting as the audience hammered tough questions home again and again.
People aren't happy with this.
Sometimes the process is not working because the people have decided that it shouldn't work. So what I would suggest is that we listen to her and then move forward. Not for you to sit there with the microphone as if we're children telling us what we're going to do. I live on this side and nobody consults with me. So I'm not interested in trying to be part of me with anybody. I'm paying with it.
So can we move forward?
One is done deal.
Yeah, if there's anyone from Walmart here to represent Walmart right now.
Folger Pratt is the landlord and stands to make a killing renting space to Walmart at the expense of the community.
I worked with our union, and then they were our union, so you can see the difference in what happens to people's inner lives.
Answer it.
For you.
Yes or no?
He's here. Walmart's not here.
Did you want to address that?
Walmart and their friends don't like the union question very much.
One moment.
He's losing his temper.
Question, because Walmart is the one that's going to be constructing the building. One, an appropriate answer, it needs to go to the appropriate person. Those persons are not here for the purpose of the small focus groups.
Small focus groups, what's wrong? You're afraid of a DC crowd?
My name is Asantor Ekwumasure. I live in Ward 6. I'm a member of Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ here in Ward 4. I want to say very respectfully, since we're in the house of the Lord, but very adamantly, I don't care about architecture. I don't care about onions and cucumbers. I do not want Walmart, period. I'm very concerned that in spite of the low wages and the unfair hiring practices of Walmart, even if you have a full-time job making a dollar or two above minimum wage working at Walmart, you will not be able to afford to live in this same community once Walmart is built. If we look at what happened to Target in the area of Columbia Heights, people who lived in that neighborhood before Target was built, paying $8,000, $9,000, maybe $1,000 a month in rent. The rent went up when the project was finished to more than $2,000. They don't want to live in the neighborhood. I don't want anyone who lives in this neighborhood to be displaced. I've been displaced due to community progress and community development. I was evicted. And we all got kicked out, and it's not fun. It's not pretty. I don't want that to happen to anyone else, with Walmart being behind that.
Ward 4 Councilmember Muriel Bowser showed up hours late because of the budget hearings, then implied that she was in favor of Walmart opening in the neighborhood. Are you for or against Walmart opening in D.C.?
I'm not against Walmart opening in D.C., but I am for. And what we have, that for Walmart opening in any kind of way. And so that's what we have to be very clear about. Now, what I normally say when I talk about this intersection, I regard it as the most critical intersection for Georgia Avenue. What happens here will trigger the revitalization of the entire corridor.
Or the destruction.
So it's very important that we get it right. I heard also a comment about why not go up to a second level. This is a conversation that I'm going to have.
That's right, Miss Muriel Bowser. Don't answer the question. Pivot to some bull crap about architecture and move on. Many at the hearing suspected this was a done deal. The entire hearing stank of the same phony public hearings that they had for the Intercounty Connector Highway in Maryland, which, like the proposed Walmarts in D.C., had lots of fake community input, none of which was ever listened to in the end. Still, never let them tell you anything is a done deal. The Intercounty Connector was held up for 40 years by real public opposition. Walmart has been stopped again and again and again by public opposition to their opening stores with their unfair hiring practices, their sweatshop goods, and their sexism, and their general abuses, and their firing union organizers is just not welcome.
In late summer, NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, issued a report claiming that three-quarters of the more than 5 million barrels of oil that erupted from British Petroleum's Deepwater Horizon's oil rig after the platform's explosion, which killed 11 workers, had disappeared. Many biologists and scientists studying the Gulf oil spill were very skeptical of that finding. But a more recent government report from November more or less confirms that study. Still, the long-term impact of the massive BP oil spill on the environment and the fishing industry won't be known for many years. The use of toxic chemical dispersants to break up the massive oil slicks and the building of sand berms or artificial barrier islands to defend against the movement of oil into estuaries rich with sea life continue to be controversial 5 months after the flow of oil into the Gulf was stopped. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Kerry St. Pay, the executive director of the Barataria-Tarbon National Estuary Program in the Bayou Country west of New Orleans that was most heavily affected by the BP disaster. He talks about the oil spill's short and long-term impacts, as well as effective and ineffective measures used to mitigate the damage.
There was heavy impact in the Barataria and Tarbon Bay, but it wasn't even comparable to the impacts that I received in a 1997 spill of 10,000 barrels that occurred deep in the estuary. There's no way that 10,000 barrels were felt in the Barataria-Tarbon Basin from this spill, although there was a lot more oil released than 10,000 barrels. Nevertheless, the Barataria Basin particularly was heavily impacted, particularly in the bird area. To the naked eye, things look pretty good. The oil came in and affected some of the vegetation, and it killed marine organisms, especially the host larva and larval shrimp and fishes. The oil impacted a lot of vegetation. The vegetation has recovered. The places that were killed above the sediment, the grass has respotted. And I would say that 90 to 95% recovered. But the offshore breeding stocks, offshore fisheries that we don't know how much that was affected. The long-term effects, we won't know for several years. We have to monitor so that we can find out what the impacts are to the offshore breeding stocks. We have to monitor long enough so that we can tell that what we've seen as far as impacts, changes in the population, are due to the oil rather than due to the normal fluctuations in the population.
Kerry St. Pay, at least 1.8 million gallons of the chemical dispersant Corexit were sprayed both on the surface and deep underwater in the Gulf to try to break up the oil. What's your view on their use?
Dispersants don't lessen the impact, the toxicity of the oil at all. The only thing they can do is transfer the area where you affect, where you see impacts. And with the southeast winds we have in Louisiana predominantly, there's no question that most of that oil, if not all of it, would have been stacked up in our internal estuary, blown by the southeast wind. And, you know, downwind is the Barataria-Terrebonne National Estuary, as well as the Breton Sound Estuary. So by dispersing it, by allowing that oil, dispersed oil, to be mixed with the water column, you have a situation where the oil is now moving in accordance with the currents, which takes it away from Louisiana. So those impacts are felt in open Gulf, which is a lesser impact as far as, you know, vulnerability of the organisms.
So on balance then, did you support the use of dispersants the way they were used?
Yes, I did. In my opinion, it was the best thing to do.
Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal initiated a project, which I guess is still going on, to build sand berms along the shoreline, ostensibly to protect the estuaries from the oil. But a lot of experts said it wasn't going to be effective. What do you think?
We didn't support the building of the sand berms at all. We didn't formally object to the construction of the sand berm, although we did voice opposition in the media. That was going to be at a cost of $180 million, and BP was paying for it. And aside from the enormous waste of resource, waste of sand that we could have used to construct the Barrier Islands legitimately, they built these sand berms, which were 6 foot high levees of sand for the purpose of, quote, keeping the oil out. And we saw that as a not a good thing.
That was Carrie St. Pay, Executive Director of the Barataria-Terrebonne National Estuary Program in Thibodaux, Louisiana. Contact the group at 1-800-259-0869 or visit their website at btnep.org.
On the 6th of December, the siege of Fortress continued with animal rights protests at the gates of Nomura Holdings, which shares a board of directors with Fortress, the lifeline of puppy killing Huntington Life Sciences.
Because you continue to be the top shareholder in Fortress Investments, the lifeline to Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that kills 500 animals each and every day of the week. They've been exposed in 7 separate undercover investigations, punching beagle puppies in the face, dissecting live primates, and mutilating rabbits to the highest bidder. Fortress has the sole power to end what is going on inside of Huntington Life Sciences walls. And you share a board of directors with Fortress, and you are the top shareholder. Therefore, you have the direct power to stop these 500 animals from dying each and every day of the week. So, Numera, it's your money!
Your fool!
Your greed!
Your fool!
Your investment!
Your fool! Until your buddies over at Fortress completely call in all loans to Huntington Life Sciences. Numera, your buddies at Fortress, your buddies at Goldman Sachs have been issuing lawsuits and injunctions against various groups involved in the Huntington Life Sciences campaign. We will not back down. We will not compromise. You will not stop the protest successfully. This is a promise you can take to the bank.
Customers of puppy killing Huntington Life Sciences also got protests shortly before people arrived at Nomura.
Until you stop the killing.
That's right, Bayer and AstraZeneca. We don't back down and we don't give in. Despite the new forms of repression against the DC activists who are protesting ties Huntington Life Sciences, this campaign will not go away. You can create new laws, you can file new injunctions, but the protests will continue, the demos will continue, until each company has severed their ties with HLS, and until HLS has sunk once and for all. This is a promise that you can take to the bank. You You can bring out your new macho tough guy security guards, but it's not going to deter us. So, until next time,
until all are free, we'll be back! We'll be back! We'll be back!
You heard that, Bayer, AstraZeneca, and Sanofi of Venice. And you especially heard that, all you Fortress stockholders out there. You know who you are, and more importantly, animal rights activists know who you are. All your injunctions, all your spies, all your cops, in the end, aren't going to get the animal rights movement off your back. In the end, you are going to dump hunting some life sciences and dump Fortress unless Fortress dumps HLS. It's just a matter of when.